This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Not every race goes to every inning, extra innings. There's a winner in Illinois, but one recount continues in upstate New York. Another inches ahead in Minnesota. It's Wednesday and time for our weekly visit with the political junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
On Wednesdays, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us to talk politics. A former Illinois governor indicted, a former Alaska senator cleared, Virginia Republicans dump their state chairman, and members of the Congressional Black Caucus take a trip to Cuba. A bit later, we'll talk with the freshly elected replacement for Rahm Emanuel and get the latest details on the glacier that is the Minnesota recount. Then, in the spirit of Mr. Smith, Murray Horowitz on the movies that celebrate the common man. You can nominate your favorite populist picture by email now. That's talk@npr.org. But as always, we begin with a trivia question. Political junkie Ken Rudin with us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil. Okay, well, as most of America knows, I ran on my political junkie blog a March Madness 2012 pool that would somehow arrive at the 2012 Republican presidential nominee.
The Republican nominee for 2012.
Yeah. Why not do it through a March Madness thing? So we had 32 Republicans included, and the winner was Ron Paul, the congressman from Texas, who ran for president in 2008. He may do so again. So the question, the trivia question is, who was the last sitting member of the House to be on the Republican national ticket?
The last sitting member of the House of Representatives to be on the Republican national ticket as president or vice presidential nominee.
That's correct.
All right. If you think you know the answer, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And, of course, the winner gets a fabulous T-shirt as a no prize, and we'll move on to that. But first of all, let's get on to the real news, and that's recounts this week. We're going to focus a little bit later on the recount in Minnesota, so save our questions on that. But upstate New York, in the New York 20th Congressional District, it was just about a dead heat after the votes were counted last week.
Right, and they're still counting because they have until April 13th to count the overseas military absentee votes. But right now, Jim Todisco, the Republican, the State Assembly Minority Leader, has a 17-vote lead. Boy, does every vote count. 17-vote lead over the Democrat Scott Murphy, first-time candidate. This is for the seat that Kirsten Gillibrand gave up when she became senator from New York.
And how long is this process going to take?
So again, we think April 13th is probably when we'll have a winner, which probably is sooner than we'll have a winner in Minnesota, but not as quickly as we got a winner yesterday in Illinois 5.
Illinois 5, this is the seat vacated by now White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel.
That's correct, and previously held by some guy named Rod Blagojevich, and before that, Dan Rostenkowski, who was chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, one of the most powerful members of Congress, until he went to prison.
So go to jail, go directly to jail, except maybe you go to the West Wing.
Or exactly. Well, Mike Quigley is the Cook County Commissioner who won that seat. He won an overwhelmingly Democratic district. It's only won by two Republicans in the past, I guess, 70, 80 years, and one of them was because Rostenkowski was under indictment. Big win for the Democrats.
And speaking of former Governor Rod Blagojevich, he has been finally indicted.
He was indicted last week, and of course, he was conveniently he was at Disney World when the indictment came down.
Does extradition work from there?
Why am I shocked? The whole thing was goofy. So
it's a Mickey Mouse indictment.
Exactly. Yeah. He will be indicted. He has been indicted, and his long career, upcoming career as a radio talk show host may not pan out.
May not blossom for him. And you know, we wish all those other radio talk show hosts exactly the same fate.
A long prison term, right.
Exactly. Now, there is interesting news from the Republican Party in Virginia. This is, of course, a state that was a solidly red state it seemed like forever since Lyndon Johnson carried the state back in 1964.
True. That was the last Democrat to take it until Barack Obama took it in 2008. But having said that, we should point out that Democrats have won the governorship there in the last two times. But still, having said that, it's a Republican nationally, but in 2008, they lost John Warner's Senate seat. They lost three congressional seats, House seats, and they had a majority in the delegation for a bunch of years. And now the chairman, Jeffrey Frederick, was ousted this week by by members of the Republican Party who felt that he was just too abrasive, too authoritarian.
And some say too conservative.
Well, he is very conservative, but I think other people are saying that, you know, the things he has said, like, for example, during the October presidential race, he did say that he said that both Barack Obama and Osama bin Laden both had friends that bombed the Pentagon. Statements like this got him in hot water.
Okay, so he is out, and so the Republican Party in Virginia trying to go more centrist, do we think?
Well, Bob McDonnell, who's the former state attorney general, who was a very strong conservative, has moderated his rhetoric, and he is trying to have a little more centrist approach, while three Democrats, including Terry McAuliffe, the former DNC chair, are beating each other up for the June 9th primary.
Well, keep an eye on that. In any case, let's see if we can get some answers to our trivia question. The last sitting member of the House of Representatives to be on the Republican national ticket.
Didn't have to be sitting. He could have been, like, crouching.
Oh, okay.
Right.
800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And Ben is on with us from Roslindale in Massachusetts.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Go ahead, please.
I'm going to go back a ways and say Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln was a Republican and was a member of Congress.
He was, and he is not the, but he is not the last Republican member of Congress to be on the national ticket.
He was the first Republican member of Congress.
He probably was. As a matter of fact, he definitely was.
All right, Ben, nice try. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Phil. Phil with us from Takema, is that right, in Nebraska?
Takema, Nebraska, yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood the question. I thought you said Democrat, so I was going with Lyndon Baines Johnson. So.
No, also he was in the United States Senate at the time.
That's right.
And
he was
vice
senator.
President when he became president.
Okay, but when he was on the ticket in 1960, he was vice president, former senator. No, I'm sorry. He was senator, but never
running
a member of the House in the 1940s.
Okay. Nice try, Phil. Bye-bye.
Sorry.
Let's see if we can go now to, this is Ed. Ed with us from West Windsor in New Jersey.
Yes. Hey, Ken and Neil. How are you?
Good, thanks.
From your home state in New Jersey.
Yep.
Love it.
I'm going to say Jerry Ford.
Gerald Ford, of course, the minority leader of the House of Representatives and former All-American football player.
That's correct, but he is not the most recent. Well, let's see. Gerald Ford was on the...
Wasn't sitting.
He wasn't...
He was never on the ticket.
Well, when he was named vice president.
Right.
But when he became on the ticket in 1976, he was already the president.
So he was not
president.
A sitting member of
he
the House.
He is a former member of Congress who became vice president, but on the ticket during the campaign, he was already an incumbent president.
So you just get the collar of the T-shirt.
I want you to know I'm the one that answered the Phil McConkie question.
Uh-huh. Well, another Jerseyite.
There you go.
Okay.
Take care, guys.
Thanks very much. Let's see if we can go now to John, and John's with us from Oak Park, Illinois.
Yes. Was it Jack Kemp?
Jack Kemp, the Republican who threw passes to Cookie Gilchrist as a member of the Buffalo Bills.
She was great. I love Cookie. Yeah, Cookie. Of course, Jack Kemp was Bob Dole's running mate in 1996, but Jack Kemp gave up his House seat in 1988 to run for president, so he was a former congressman when he ran for vice president in 96.
I should go on my second choice.
Well, no, you only get one chance.
I know.
All
Thank
right.
You.
Thanks very much. And let's go to Tom, and Tom's calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
William E. Miller, 1964, with Barry Goldwater.
William E. Miller, Barry Goldwater's running mate in 1964. Ken Rudin?
That sounds like a T-shirt to me. That
ding,
is
ding,
correct.
Ding, 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 ding.
Bill Miller was an upstate New York congressman who, matter of fact, was chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee, and Barry Goldwater picked him to run for vice president because, in his Goldwater's words, he drove LBJ nuts. That's a good criteria.
And he then went on, of course, to star in, what, American Express ads.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yep. Tom, we're going to put you on hold, and our trusty aides will take down your information and mail you off a fabulous NPR political junkie no prize.
Well, I'm glad I waited till you had a real prize, no prize.
Good for you. Hang on. Let's see if I could push the right button here. In the meantime, speaking of people in office who thought to be running for, well, higher office, depends on how you calculate it, Governor Sarah Palin, widely rumored by some, to be running for the Senate seat currently held by Lisa Murkowski, a fellow Republican.
Well, actually, widely rumored by the press, because Sarah Palin never indicated that she would run against Lisa Murkowski. Of course, when Sarah Palin was elected governor in 2006, she beat Frank Murkowski, Lisa's father, who appointed her to the Senate. See if you can follow all that. But Sarah Palin announced this week that she, in fact, will be raising money for Lisa Murkowski's reelection campaign next year. We don't know for sure if Sarah Palin will seek reelection as governor, but she's not running against for the Senate against Murkowski.
And speaking about senators who might or might not run for the Senate, Charlie Crist in Florida.
Right. It looks like that Charlie Crist is going to opt out of running for governor for reelection and will run for the Senate seat that Mel Martinez gave up. A lot of Republicans who, like Connie Mack, the Congressman Connie Mack, have said that they're going to step out of the race, and they've all contacted Charlie Crist saying, I'm not running for the Senate. So apparently they're leaving the door wide open for Charlie Crist to run.
And I wanted to ask you a bit about Senate procedural maneuvering. The Obama Justice Department had planned to release four more of those so-called torture memos. These are the legal opinions drawn up during the Bush administration that said the enhanced interrogation techniques used at Guantanamo and other places were legal because they plan to release them. And now maybe they're not.
Well, Republicans are saying that if you're going to do that, then maybe we'll retaliate by filibustering some of your judicial nominees or something like that. So the Republican Party is playing hardball with that, although that seems kind of a backfiring way of contract negotiations, but it seemed kind of odd to me.
They can do that? One senator can say, hey, you can't do this. I can hold up this nominee?
One senator could always hold up a nominee, and of course, until they have some kind of an answer in Minnesota, which would give Democrats 59 seats, assuming Al Franken is seated, they still can't push through a nominee until they get 60.
And of course, the glaciers may return before Al Franken ever gets seated. We're going to focus on that question in a little bit when we come back from a short break. So if you have questions about the process, if you can call it that, of the recount in Minnesota, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. We're also going to talk with Mike Quigley, the victor yesterday in the 5th District in Illinois, where he will replace Rahm Emanuel as a Democrat and as a member of the House of Representatives. So we'll hear from him, too. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. Ken Rudin is with us every Wednesday as the Political Junkie. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's Wednesday. That means Ken Rudin, our political junkie, is with us. Tell us what political news has you buzzing, or in the case of long recounts, fuming. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website, where you can see Ken Rudin's blog as well. That's at npr.org. To get in on our conversation here, just click on Talk of the Nation. There was a special election in Chicago yesterday for the seat vacated by President Obama's now chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, in Illinois Congressional District. Mike Quigley, a Cook County commissioner, won it with almost 70% of the vote, and he joins us now by phone from Chicago. Congressman-elect Mike Quigley, nice to have you on Talk of the Nation, and congratulations.
Great. It's great to be on.
And given our recent history of cliff dwellers, as Wes Westrum once said, this is quite a triumph.
You know, I'm just so pleased the voters gave me their trust. I got to tell you, in Illinois, getting the voters' trust is not an easy thing to do. We have a long way to go to reestablish that, but that's part of our trip to D.C.
Do you feel like this district is a little snake bit? Your predecessors include Governor Blagojevich and Dan Rostenkowski.
Yeah, well, it's unfortunately not just at the congressional level. The voters in Chicago, Cook, and Illinois have had to read about the scandal du jour for some time now. So, unfortunately, it's not just at this level. It unfortunately permeates. I think the best line I heard is that hunting for corruption in Illinois is like hunting for cows. They come up to you and moo. So, you know, we recognize what the issues are that people want to address. Clearly, economy is number one. But you have to be missing something here if you don't recognize that the issue, you know, I've been fighting for 10 years at Cook County, was transparency, accountability, ethics, and reform.
Given all that, what do you make of the situation of the junior senator from Illinois?
Well, it was unfortunately an unwise decision to make an appointment. I favor special elections in almost all of these situations. It was a mistake to accept the nomination. And unfortunately, we're stuck in a situation where it's going to go for some time. I do think what has come to light here in Chicago is a call for reforms and such things, more special elections, and perhaps an easier way to hold elections without so much cost and time taking place.
And here to ask a question is somebody, I have to admit, in all honesty, has already been bribed with Quigley campaign buttons, Ken Rudin.
They're on my website. Congratulations, Congressman-elect. I have a question. The real race, obviously, was the March 3rd primary, the Democratic primary, and you won 22% of the vote there against, I guess 12,000 other candidates.
Yes.
Question is, do you have any fence mending to make, back home?
No, you know what? Folks that were in the primary with me have all been great. We've all had talks. They've all come on to my fundraising committees, and we're all talking again. People like John Fritchie already held an event for me. So, unfortunately, we Democrats in primaries, we like to hold firing squads in a circle. But once they're over, we move forward together, usually.
And now you're going to be going to Congress, and have you been studying up on the issues that you're going to have to be voting on there?
You know, we have. There's some institutional memory that we need to learn about. Congressman Foster told me, he was in a similar situation. You get elected and you go to D.C. Most congressmen have almost 2 months of training and orientation that leadership puts on for you. So we have to hit the ground running. So I think the task here is to hire a really good staff and to work like crazy to beef up on the issues, the specific legislation that's coming down the pipe. But that's our job, and we look forward to it.
And another position, if you will, and that is on the question that a lot of people are talking about these last couple of years anyway, earmarks, so-called pork. Are you going to be proposing special dispensations for your district?
Well, the way I look at it, the president has started to talk about earmark reform, a centralized bank, and limitations and a review process. I think there's other reforms that should be put in place. I think there should be a more open and transparent process for choosing earmarks, having community meetings and community groups engage in that, and also letting folks know way ahead of time what those options are. But I'll tell you, if you're the only congressman in the world in the United States saying, I don't want earmarks, and there are 434 other congressmen who will say, fine, I'll take it at this point in time. So I think the process needs a pretty dramatic reform. But, fighting for your district isn't the worst thing in the world to do. Every district has its specific issues. We've had some horrible flooding here along some of our rivers. We've had real damage and problems to our transit system. And there's so many others that have to be addressed. I can't be the freshman 434th ranked congressman saying to my district, in these bad economic times, I'm not going to fight for you on any of these issues.
Well, Congressman-elect, we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Mike Quigley came out in favor of special elections because he just won one yesterday. He is now the freshman Democrat from Illinois and will be coming to Washington to be sworn in to the House of Representatives. He will not need a recount to settle his race. He won overwhelmingly. Tantamount to victory, there is victory in the Democratic primary. There are, of course, a couple of races that have yet to be resolved. The special election for now Senator Kirsten Gillibrand's seat in upstate New York for one. No winner there as yet. And Minnesota, which has just one sitting senator. Joining us now to talk about that race is Rachel Stassenberger, a political reporter for the St. Paul Pioneer Press, with us by phone from her office in St. Paul. Nice to have you on the phone today.
Wonderful to be invited.
And what is the latest?
Well, we actually have a big change in Minnesota. Al Franken now leads by a grand total of 312 votes out of almost 3 million cast.
And that is an improvement of what, about 85 votes?
What's that?
That's about 85 votes ahead of where it used to be.
Exactly. Yesterday, they did what should be the final counting of ballots into the race. He picked up 87 votes in that process. It happened in open court. There were rejected absentee ballots. And so it looks like, for the moment, Franken has padded his victory to a huge, more than 300-vote lead.
And so this is just the appellate division, though, of the Minnesota court. As I understand it, there's more layers of court yet.
That's right. We're not even quite at the appeal process. This is what we call an election contest in Minnesota. We had, as you probably know, a two-month hand recount of all the 2.9 million, 3 million votes in the race. After that, Republican Norm Coleman filed a lawsuit saying, you know what, he should be the winner, not Al Franken. And for the last 2 months, we've been watching that play out. That should end, this stage of the process should end in the next week or so. And then Norm Coleman has said that he will file an appeal to our state Supreme Court. So we're waiting a little while longer.
And in the event that he loses there, he could, of course, then appeal that to the federal courts.
He could indeed. I've heard some mixed opinions as to whether or not the U.S. Supreme Court would take up our Minnesota case. So we'll have to see, but we're waiting for the next stage.
Rachel, hi, it's Ken Rudin. Two questions. One, the Coleman people are arguing that there are at least several thousand voters who have been disenfranchised, and that's why he's not giving up the fight. But at the same time, what are you hearing back home about whether he should continue that fight?
You know, I think it's, you obviously hear from Republican partisans that he should continue as long as he is able. You still hear, despite the fact that this was a really very transparent and, frankly, long process, that Al Franken may have stolen the election. There is no evidence of that whatsoever. But there are some legal questions that the Coleman campaign say that the current court, which will finish up in the next week or so, hasn't been able to answer. And he's got some support for continuing to fight on.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email is talk at npr.org. And Nathan's on the line with us from New York City.
Hi, Rachel, I had a question. If we assume all the legal challenges have been exhausted, does Pawlenty have the right to not certify the election? I remember with Chicago, or with Illinois, rather, with Roland Burris, there's some talk that the Secretary of State might not certify. Is that a real option for Pawlenty?
Pawlenty being Tim Pawlenty, the Republican governor of Minnesota. Go ahead, Rachel.
That's right. In Minnesota, we have a state law that the state Supreme Court actually did weigh in on within this process that says during a contested election, an election certificate cannot be issued. So that's why no one is seated right now. The Coleman campaign says, you know what, it's not clear whether any appeals after the state Supreme Court appeal, which obviously we haven't even gotten to yet, would stop an election certificate from being issued. Democratic Secretary of State Mark Ritchie says, well, his reading says that after a state Supreme Court appeal, then the winner gets an election certificate. Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, a Republican, has said, you know, it's a little less clear than that because a federal court could stay the issuance of an election certificate. But that's a fight that we'll probably see next month. We're waiting until May for that one.
Oh, well, that's later in the season when both the weather warms up and the legal arms can really get loose up there in Minnesota.
There you go.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Nathan.
Thank you so much, Neil.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to this is Oren. Oren with us from Jamison, Pennsylvania.
Oh, hi, Ken. Nice to talk to you. Nobody has commented on the mathematics of this. It's statistically impossible to ever know who really won. You know, you can come out with a vote number, but because the margin of vote, the vote margin is much smaller than the margin of probable error caused by the voting methods and the counting methods, there is no way to know who really won.
We had somebody on to make that point. Nevertheless, that's not the way the process works, is it, Rachel?
No, it's not. And actually, Republicans have made that point. Coleman attorney Ben Ginsburg yesterday said, when you get an election this close, you can't tell who won. And what the Franken folks in the state of Minnesota would say is, you know what, on election night you couldn't tell who won, but we have seen every single one of these ballots. They have been recounted by hand. They have been looked at by justices from the state Supreme Court on down, and when the process is finally over, we will have a clear winner. But so that's, I think that's one of the things that people are going to be debating about for years, and one of the things, frankly, that comes up when we have elections that are this close.
I don't think there's any such thing as a clear winner here. You can have a number and that can be accepted, but it's not going to be a clear winner.
Right. One person's going to take a seat in the Senate in Washington, D.C. That person
right.
is the clear winner. Thanks very much, Oren.
Yep, thanks.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to Joe, and Joe's with us from Great Bear Lake in Minnesota.
Yeah, question is regarding Norm Coleman, if he pursues this over and over and over again through the next couple of stages, how does he come off looking if he ends up losing? Kind of pathetic, and is that sort of the end of the line for him, or is he going to continue to run for this or that? How does he ultimately come off looking if he ends up losing?
I think Joe has a really good point there about the political calculation, which is, you know, right now, the Coleman fight, you know, A, he thinks he has won and he is right to continue fighting, and Republicans in D.C. are offering him support and Republicans across the country are offering him cash. This has been a very expensive proceeding. But there are people who are very frustrated that we don't have our full complement of senators here in Minnesota. We think we're good enough to have two, but it's been lacking. And so certainly Democrats and some regular Minnesotans have started to say, you know what, it's time for Coleman to leave the fight so that we can finally have two just like every other little state.
Joe, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And Ken, this goes to the point. Senate Republicans are all in favor of Coleman dragging this out for as long as possible. That keeps Democrats at 58 seats.
Well, exactly. I mean, John Cornyn, who's the chairman of the NRSC, the Republican Senatorial Committee, has said, you know, let's go to the U.S. Supreme Court if we have to, because obviously they don't want the Democrats to get it closer to 60. Rachel, one question also I want to ask you is that there must be tremendous pressure on Governor Pawlenty what to do, because he is also eligible to run for a third term in 2010, and he has White House ambitions for 2012.
That's right. I mean, he also has a political calculation to make. You know, it's not really clear. He has not drawn any lines in the sand saying, I will not sign this election certificate. He has allowed some wiggle room in that regard, which certainly helps with some of the partisans. But I'm not 100% sure. We're not just going to be, you know, smoothing that out as we go down the road. But sure, I mean, if Pawlenty refuses to sign an election certificate, that may help Republicans in their fight to keep Franken from the Senate if he ends up being the winner. But I'm not sure that he will pick up a gun and say, I will not sign.
Rachel, we'll continue to get updates from you and your grandchildren eventually. Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Rachel Stassenberger, the political reporter for the St. Paul Pioneer Press, joining us on the phone from her office in St. Paul, Minnesota. This is the Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we get another caller on the line. This is Ted. Ted with us from Sundance in Wyoming.
Yeah, my question, Neil, first off, I'd just like to say thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
And my question would be, would this race have been impacted by the now discredited prosecution of Ted Stevens?
Oh, the senatorial election in Alaska last November, where he was very narrowly beaten by Begovich?
But also the Senate race in Minnesota. If you look at, I think I've listened to your show for quite a few years, and especially over this election cycle, and how many times was the credibility of Republican candidates drawn into question due to this prosecution?
The Stevens prosecution?
Yeah.
Ken, is this, there were other corruption cases against Republicans, but the Stevens one obviously prominent right in the middle of the campaign.
Well, when you think of it, Ted,
right at the end.
Exactly. And Ted Stevens was campaigning under indictment. He was convicted right before the election, and he only lost by 1,000 or 2,000 votes. So obviously there was tremendous reservoir of feeling for Ted Stevens and had the prosecution. The question really to me is not so much was Ted Stevens guilty or not, is whether the prosecution botched the case. And apparently when you don't share information with the defense, the judge there was just livid. He said never in 25 years has he ever seen such a miscarriage of justice.
But I think Ted's question is, if that had been the case, if this case had been thrown out of court back in last September before the conviction, might that have swayed 312 or whatever it is votes in Minnesota?
Absolutely. To me, it seems like that would make...
Because of the stain of corruption against the Republican Party in general.
Well, there is that argument, but of course, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people who just didn't like both Norm Coleman and Al Franken. Perhaps it could have affected, certainly it would have kept Ted Stevens in the Senate. I'm not sure how much of an effect it would have had in Minnesota. And of course, you had Dean Barkley, the third party candidate in Minnesota, that got 12% of the vote. So there was an anybody but Norm or Al candidate in Dean Barkley.
And that would have affected this if it had gone to a runoff or some sort of special election, because where would that 12% support have gone?
Which they don't have, right?
Which they don't have. There's no provision for that. Ted, thanks very much for the call.
Yep, thank you.
And Ken Rudin, as always, thanks very much.
Thanks.
And you can read Ken Rudin's Political Junkie blog at NPR. It's a blog now.
It is.
At Political Junkie blog at npr.org. He joins us every Wednesday on Talk of the Nation. And coming up, Murray Horowitz joins us to talk about our favorite populist movies, films in praise of the common man, woman, or in the case of Ratatouille, rodent.
What do I always say? Anyone can cook.
Movies with Murray next. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.